Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome. Good morning. 11 minutes past 9. Beautiful morning in Johannesburg. Public holiday. Today is Youth Day. And today's program I'm devoting to, I'm dedicating to the late Dr. Melville Edelstein. I'm sure many of you remember he was the first white person to be killed in 1976 when they had the Soweto uprisings. And if you listened this past Tuesday, I had in the studio Kevin Harris, who produced a documentary for SABC on the life of the late Dr. Melville Edelstein. And last night in Tel Aviv at the Bar Ilan University Beit HaTzfuot, they showed the same documentary, but they put now Hebrew subtitles in that documentary, and the family were there as well. So that is why this morning I've dedicated the program to him. We have in the studio this morning Dr. Jonathan Mark. Good morning, Jonathan. How are you today?
Well, it's a beautiful morning, and last week you said winter has arrived. Has winter left? it's just a magnificent day. And, you know, it was a little bit of a chill in the morning. But
the morning is cold.
But now it's warm, and I think till about 4 o'clock.
Yes.
The classic Johannesburg winter weather, you know, a bit chilly at night, but blue skies in during the day. Warms up to about 18, 19, 20 degrees.
Yes.
Beautiful weather.
Yeah, lovely weather, beautiful weather. And, of course, not the weather that they had a week ago in Cape Town.
Yes.
Unfortunately. And look at those fires in Neisner, Plettenberg Bay. Yes.
Wow.
It's horrific. Unbelievable.
And the fire in London.
In fine London,
West,
yes.
West London, the one's worst nightmare if you live in a block of flats like that.
That, yes. And, you know, it's not an old building. It was built in 1974.
Yes.
And well, they put in an investigation into what caused the blaze. They don't know.
Mm.
And by the way, in that building, there was a Jewish restaurant.
Oh, yes. Kosher.
Kosher restaurant in that building.
In that building. What, the ground floor?
The ground floor, I think. Or
so was it Milchik? Was it Fleishik? Do you know?
Yeah. I don't know.
And was it Ethiopian? Because I think it was a lot of people from Africa lived in that flat.
Yeah.
But the press in England, it's... You know, wall-to-wall covering of this incident in
yes.
London.
Yes.
Because the terrorists is another issue. But this could happen in any block of flats. This is a human error.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't like the red tape when you're building. And, you know, the fire escapes or whatever. But, you know, sometimes you have to be extremely serious because you don't know what's going to cause it. They say a fridge was faulty, and that caught a light and then spread to the whole building. Yep.
Yeah. Now, we're going to continue on our theme, which we've been talking about for the past few weeks, and that's about superstition, tradition, custom. And have you got any ideas this morning how we can start off? I've got a few, but we can...
Yeah, this is how the brain works. You know, what's in mind, you actually see outside in reality. And I was at a bris. It was the Rabbi Raff bris. And before they started the bris, when the baby was there in front of them all, the father said, Shema Yisrael, Shema Yisrael. And the last few pasukim we say, yes. And Kor Nidre. I've never heard that before. So there must be a number of customs in
yes.
this. Do you know Rabbi Levi, the Sephardic rabbi?
Yeah, Yeshua Levi.
Yeah. No, there's two, I think his brother.
Aviyu.
So he comes on a Friday night to my hasha, and he sits in front of me. And before we start davening afterwards, he listens to this program, and he gives me a drosha on a Sephardic minhagim. So that's an added bonus to the program. But before we maybe go into traditions, it's this program of that we put together, and a chai pabi in more general, reaches a very interesting audience. And, I would like to ask people to send a WhatsApp or to phone in, because I'm sure they know a lot of traditions that we could spark off thoughts in us, because our Jewish tradition is rich in tradition that goes back thousands of years.
Right. So you can apps us, or you can send an SMS to 34519, or you can call us on 074-654-7335. If you have any, you know, you want to contribute to traditions, customs, superstition, etc. Now, this morning I did mention that this is going to be devoted to Dr. Melville Edelstein of blessed memory. So, but we also want to talk about other people who contributed to the social aspect of the, you know, this community as well.
Yep. Well, in 1976, I was doing what they call military service. I don't think you can call it military service for me, because I was I worked in the library for a year in a little shtot called Bethlehem in the Free State, and this was in July of 1976, and we were in the army, and it caused quite a large fear in the army, especially those that didn't really want to be there and didn't want to defend such a system. But then afterwards I worked in KwaZulu-Natal, but especially Barra, and I came across so many Jews, especially in the medical field. And you can say that's a social, you know, that's a social side of it, who have contributed enormously to health in this country, saving probably collectively hundreds of thousands of lives through places like Barra and the community clinics.
Yeah.
So I wasn't aware of Dr. Edelstein, and I think, what was he, a social worker?
He was a sociologist.
Yes.
And he worked in Soweto, Jabavu, and he worked for the city council, and he did a lot of research. And he helped, you know, in those days, if a parent lived in Soweto and their children came and wanted to go to school, he used to issue the permits. They had to have a special permit for them to come to go to school in Soweto. And also he did a lot of the research into the education. He actually warned the government about Bantu education. The Minister of Education then, I'm sure you may have heard of his name, was Dr. Andries Treurnicht.
Yeah, wow. Dr. No. His name is Dr. No. The Verkrampte of the Verkrampte.
He was very, very verkrampt.
Yeah.
He was actually a minister in a church.
Mm.
And they had this education, of course. And he warned them, and he knew that something is going to happen. Now, he had two secretaries, and that day, that was June, like today, the 16th, 1976, the night before, he had a premonition, and he drove back to his offices because his secretary was coming into work, and he was afraid something would happen to her, but she didn't come in, and unfortunately, a lot of the youth didn't know what he was doing, and you know, in their temper and their rage, unfortunately, he was killed.
Because of his color.
Of his color.
Not because he was Jewish.
Not because he was Jewish, but his color.
He was a white man representing the enemy.
Yeah. And a lot of his helpers, the black helpers, knew about him and were very terribly disturbed when this happened, because, he'd done so much for them in the community. And then he had another secretary who was in Johannesburg here. Her name was Barbara Brown. Her father was a famous member of parliament, Labour. His name was Leo Lovell. Came from Benoni. And then he went to live in Swaziland. He was very anti-government. I'm not going to go into the whole background of this. So, but we had other people as well. Do you remember a lady called, I think it was Hellman, Ellen Hellman.
Yes, yes. Wasn't it race relations?
Yes.
I heard it's South African Institute of Race Relations. Yes.
Yes.
I think she was the president or the CEO or something. Yes.
Yes.
I heard her speak a few times. Yeah.
Yes. She was also very involved.
Yes.
And you know, I can also mention like Selma Brody.
Yes. That was going through my mind now, because she's a medical doctor.
She's an oncologist.
Yeah, a radiotherapist. And she used to bring to Barra visitors from overseas to show them the conditions. And, you know, Barra then, I'm not so sure now, but it was never 100% capacity. It was 150% capacity, especially on a Sunday, Monday. In other words, there was a bed and a person on a mattress under the bed. So if you walked into a ward, and let's say there were 50 beds, you could find 80 people in that. you know, it was quite incredible. And I remember being on a Sunday afternoon on duty, and I had to go put up a drip, and there was a patient under the bed. Now, you also had not only 80 people, but each patient had 5 visitors. So there were 300-400 people in this room, and they were all watching this rookie doctor trying to drip a patient under the bed. That's just one of memories. But Selma Brody, her son was in my class, but she was very active and trying to you know, change things. Yeah, I'm not so aware of those who involved more in the social services, like the social workers and the sociologists. I was much more involved in the medical doctors, who yes. made a great contribution.
Yeah, and you know, but although you talk about, you say, a bed and a mattress underneath, but you had some of the top doctors in Baragwan yes. at
yes.
that stage.
In our previous show, we did a few months on this. Yes. Yeah, with the diagnostic ability and the teaching was world class. there were students from overseas who were lined up applying to come and work at places like Barra because of not just the experience and the volume, but also the teaching. But once you've got that that side, the treatment was very limited, and the follow up was actually quite poor. I mean, because we're just dealing with these massive volumes of people who are sick, but really sick. So, a lot of Jews have made contributions there. Maybe we can switch after the ad break to actually the youth. We can talk about the youth.
Okay.
And maybe from a psychiatric point of view, well, the adolescent brain, and there's a lot of interesting research on the adolescent brain.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. Just to remind you that Shabbat comes in this evening at 5:05 p.m. Motzei Shabbat 5:58. The Parsha is Shalach, and it's also Shabbat Mevorachim. We're going to Bench Rosh Chodesh for the month of Tammuz, which will be next Friday and Shabbat. Now, I've got in the studio controlling this morning Tabo, who myself and him go back many years here at Chayavim. Tabo, just to your thoughts on the youth of today and what 1976? Were you born then? No.
No.
So what's the difference today? What would you contribute? What would you say? Who were your heroes, or what would you say is different from then and today?
You know, I think, Isaac, the youth of 1976, they were committed to education. They really valued education so much compared to today's youth. Today's youth, they do have the opportunities. Everything is there, but they're just not interested in getting education. All they want is just to have fun with their lives. That's their main goal. But if, you can't even say you compare the two, because of that's not even comparing apples with apples. You're comparing apples with bananas, because today, I mean, it's just a joke.
Yeah, you're right. In 1976, they wanted that education, and they were getting that bond to education, they called it, that poor education. And you're quite right today. The education is there, and they're not taking advantage of it. I may be wrong, but...
Well, let's open this discussion, because maybe there are some. I wouldn't put a blanket thing. There are some students who are very keen to learn. I think there's a massive systemic problem in the education system. For example, the teachers' union is extremely powerful, very powerful, and to bring in changes, you know, someone told me if you're a teacher in a school, or teaching maths, there's 14 levels of bureaucracy to get to. I think the MEC. Or the Minister of Education. So it's a system that is over bloated, and it's not really coming into what's needed. Mm-hmm. For example, I would say that I'm not the only writer, and it's at the top in the world, that our current education system is more positioned for the 20th century. the 19th and 20th century over factory and manufacturing. It's not where the 21st century is, which is about critical thinking skills. It's about rote learning. You know, you learn it and you repeat it and you get marks for that. Very much like a factory, you know, like, you know, quality control.
Mechanical.
It's mechanical. There's not what the kids, I think, want deep down is to be able to think critically and to make a contribution as opposed to be just being like computers and just regurgitating. A very sad fact is that many of these students are getting so-called good matrics, but when they get to university, they don't know how to learn. They don't know how to. They don't have the skills for university. So there might be an attitude. I might agree that some. I won't say all, but there are many that do want a decent education. But I think the focus is wrong. It's, you know, you can on if they've got an app. If they've got an application or a phone, a smartphone, they can get the information. But how do they use the information? What is your response?
You see, that's where I'm glad you actually talked about the smartphone, because of the government has introduced this thing of giving matriculants iPads and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So now the problem with that, I've seen it. Instead of getting the information to take you to the next level in terms of educating yourself, all they use these tablets for, it is just to chat. They turn it into their own a private thing. Most of the time you'll find them sitting there with the free Wi-Fi's at school. They're just chatting, watching movies and stuff like that. They're not downloading the right information. Now, a couple of weeks ago, in fact, last month, we did have a guest from Israel who was talking about the new technology that Israel is introducing to the world. And one of the things, it was that they need to have some sort of like an app where a teacher could actually see what you're doing in that iPad.
Right.
Because of they're sitting in class, you have this iPad in front of you, but you're not doing the work. Instead, you're chatting. You know, the teacher should be able to see what you're doing, and they need to be able to actually control what's happening there.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's part of it. But the question is, where actually is the systemic problem? Is it with the teachers who are not being trained or motivated to bring more exciting and critical thinking skills into the class, or they're just there because it's a job?
The teaching qualification, it's easy to obtain. That's why everybody would go for it. I mean,
The qualification, but you know, there's much more than qualification. You know, my wife is a top educator in the country, and she's she trains professors, and we have these discussions all the time, the philosophy of education. And we have to, when you're talking about Israel and technology, is that they have shifted towards what's really needed. What are the critical skills needed? Not for the factories, not for the man. The robots are going to, artificial intelligence, the robots are going to take that over. Now, there was a wonderful article in the New York Times this week about how the billionaires of Silicon Valley are investing in schools and saying you have to change your syllabus and the way you teach, because if you continue in the old way, there's going to be no jobs for them. You see, so you've got two problems. Is this matric is not, let's say, get to a matric is giving you the ability to have a decent job, and second of all, it's not giving you the critical skills that we can see where there's a problem, and then solve it. The Israelis have mastered it. Third point from this is South Korea. I think we might have mentioned it. Went to Israel. And South Korea said, you know, we're very similar to you. We don't have natural resources. We don't have oil. We don't have lots of water. We don't have diamonds. We don't have any of that. We've both got great enemies. Israel surrounded by enormous enemies. North Korea wants to take out South Korea. And what they found, the difference was Talmud, learning the Gemara. And South Korea is learning Talmud, the Gemara, which has been learned by the rabbis and pupils for thousands of years, because at the center is teaching critical thinking skills. So if I was the Minister of Education, or I met Bill Gates, and they're all coming in at some levels, is how do we switch from this rote learning to critical skills with different outcomes? It doesn't have to, maybe a radical change. We don't need distinctions anymore. But can you solve problems? That's where we're shifting. And maybe the kids are reacting because they're bored. So you might be correct in what you're observing, but what's the reason? What do you say? You've been around the education system for many years, Isaac.
It's changed dramatically, unbelievable. Yeah. And every time they introduce a new system, it goes one step backwards.
Yes.
It doesn't go forward at all.
Yes.
And you're quite right. There's no critical thinking at all.
Mm.
It's mechanical.
Yes.
You know, you take a textbook, you learn it off by heart, but they've got no experience. They have no practical experience at all whatsoever.
Yes.
And the difference between the 1976 learners or students who cried, who wanted that education, you know, and today, when it's all given to them, it is there. I'm not talking about university free education, etc. Is that to go in and to destroy a library, to destroy the equipment.
Yeah, but we must be careful. You know, if you bring us the critical thinking to this.
Yes, that's critical thinking.
Is that 2 or 3% mustn't give 97% a bad
name.
I really think there's some youth that really want to make a difference, that are hardworking and whatever. It's just that the system is antiquated. You know, education is the most important for Youth Day. Education is a priority, and that's the only way to lift society in significant ways is through education. And today's education at its core must be critical thinking skills. You can get all the information by phoning Isaac on Chai FM if you want facts, or Google, or it's all there. But how do you use that knowledge? And that's where the emphasis has to be.
You know, I remember when Nelson Mandela was articled to Laz Sadelsky.
Yes.
The first thing Laz Sadelsky said to Nelson Mandela, whatever you do, Nelson, see that your children get educated.
Mm.
Education, education. And he drove it into him that the first thing Nelson Mandela did is establish the Nelson Mandela Foundation for Education. He got Oprah Winfrey to build a school. Everything was focused on education.
Yes.
And if you educate your people, then you go ahead, you have critical thinking.
Yeah.
So we're going to take a break, and we'll play some music, and we'll be back in a few moments.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Welcome back. We're talking all about education. And, of course, we mentioned as well, you can talk about certain traditions in education.
Absolutely.
As well. So have you got anything to add?
Yeah,
on
you know, if you just look at the Jewish tradition of education goes back since, I don't know, Avraham Avinu. Right back there, teaching. Was it Yaakov? He was in a yeshiva. For 22 years. So, and education has always been, I think, the savior of the Jewish people, because we've been a nation of refugees. We're wandering, but somehow we always have put education, and every generation has their parents that sacrifice so much of their capital and their pleasure and their capital into educating.
You see that their children are better educated than them.
Yeah.
And also, we're known as the children of people of the book.
People of the book, yeah. So, I've had a very interesting week so far on, because, you know, I've moved out of clinical psychiatry into brain health, calling it personal brain management. And I had a fantastic lunch yesterday with one of South Africa's top private equity investors. And he said to me, the program I'm putting, which is on my app and my website now, which is all about brain management, he wants to pilot in one of South Africa's top high schools, top high schools. And what is happening really is I'm pushing this idea that the biggest asset we have is our brain. Much bigger than property and shares and income is the brain. And this is what we have to put forward into this country on Youth Day and of course every single day, is how do you maximize your brain potential? We'll all be given different talents. I've got to also put a little a formula that the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of your decisions. And we're making decisions all the time. And critical thinking is central to making better decisions. It's not about just being rote. And I would like to see much more debate and looking at how we can develop brain. By the way, brain, you don't just develop your brain by swatting. Exercise, eating well, sleeping well, reading, writing, all kinds of things. So if this is my contribution to Youth Day for today and the future generations, we have to develop this ethos, this culture, which does come from what's central in Judaism, is an ethos of education, passing it down from teacher to student, from father, mother to child. We say it, Shema Yisrael, how many times a day? Twice. We have to say it twice. And the second paragraph is you will teach it to your children.
Children, correct.
So it's part of our consciousness. That has to become the culture as we pass it down. We don't always get it right. But waiting for it. No, we must be active and develop the most important asset that humans have, and that's the brain.
Then you know, and in Judaism, we take a child of 3 or 4 years old, we start to teach them men immediately.
I would say almost when they pop out, you know.
But
you know, if you look at, I'm sure it's in many cultures, but the amount of parent care that's put into a child, you know, children, singing to them, holding them,
yes,
reading to them when they want you. Was 9 months, or talking to them. You know, children are seen, have to be seen, and have to be heard. There's some cultures seen but not heard, or not seen, not heard. In other words, send them off to the hostel, send them off to the wherever. If you ask me for a practical idea today on Youth Day, is this: families that eat together, not only stay together, but they bring up wonderful children. And for many, many years, we had a golden rule in our house, bring up 3 sons, and I had my in-laws there as well, that for dinner, for half an hour, 45 minutes, there was no excuse, 6 days a week, that we sat there at the table, no cell phones, no, I want to go watch the cricket, and it was fantastic, because in that 45 minutes or so, what we discussed and we passed down, problems at school, there was a political, there was soccer, whatever it was. And, you know, sometimes I had to bang on the table and say, I want my 2 minutes now, because 2 minutes means no interruptions. Of course, at 45 seconds, they would start to interrupt. But this is not rocket science. This is like getting to people and saying, you know what is our most important asset? It's our brain. We've all given all different talents. Some are good at math, some are good at languages, some are good at with people, some are more geeks. And that's how we have to – we need to design, as with education, from biology of the brain, not from sociology. I mean, social constructs are very important. But if you understand how the brain develops, that's how we should develop our education system. If we can't do it politically – the very least, we should do it in our homes, where we have influence. In other words, in our circle of influence.
You said they eat together. There's that famous saying, a family that pray together, yes, stay together.
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, if a family, say, whatever religion it is, and you all go to synagogue, you go to a church, or wherever you go, but if you go as a family unit, that family unit will always stay together.
Yes, yes. But where we say that the best transmission of education, the development, is around the kitchen table.
Right.
For not the whole day, a half an hour, 30 minutes, but it has to become a tradition. Not let's do it tonight. This is the time to eat, and we discuss things, and then things just roll out. Just things roll out in its own way.
Right. Yeah. What is your view on that, Thabo?
I think, you know what, a family is very important. But what I'm taking from what you're saying is that it's very important to actually, from the young age, to start passing down to your kids, so that when they grow up, they are responsible adults.
Yes.
Because if you've got responsible kids, eventually you'll have a responsible adult.
Yes.
Not just to ignore them, because of most of the time, I mean, this day and age, you know, you can sit with your kids in one room, but everyone's doing their own thing. They're on their cell phone, you're on your cell phone for like, and you call that spending time with the kids.
Quality time.
Actually, to be there emotionally, spiritually, and not just to be present.
So if you just take what you're saying is, yes, when you're playing around and what you're going to have, but when it comes to a meal time, like or dinner time, let's say, then there should be very simple rules. No cell phone, no interruption. If the phone rings, tell them to phone later, whatever, because we need that time where we're not interrupted. A major problem in the education system is the distraction. And social media is a major distraction. So, if you put like a half an hour, 45 minutes for dinner at night with some ground rules, the children love it. The children, because they can hear their voice and their voice and they can hear other voices. And it doesn't always have to be just on education. It can be on, you know, Bafana or a political issue. It's almost like you're reading the news, the news of the day. And there was no, some examples is that there was a problem with a kid at school or a teacher. Or there were some teachers not pitching up. I wasn't aware of it. I went straight to the headmaster and I said, this is not right. You expect the students to be there on time, but what about teachers not pitching up? And you mentioned that it can be terrible where teachers don't come for the whole week and you just sit there bored. So I think education, educare, it comes from the word educare. Education comes from educare, which is to draw out.
To draw out.
Not just to fill in. Draw out from the person. That's what it's about. And we've been given this marvelous, marvelous organ called the brain. And where we are, I mean, if you just look at the technology that's around us, that all comes from human brains.
Yeah. Critical. You know, just to give you an example, when we have a shiur, a good example, the cardinal rule, no cell phones, everything is off. Because if you're having a shiur, that's a discussion on the Talmud for an hour, just for Tava's information, we don't want to be interrupted. We want to use our brain to focus, to interact with each other, to ask questions, to answer. But in a moment, if a phone goes off, you become distracted.
Absolutely.
And then and not only distracted, it's the person who's giving the shiur then becomes very, very annoyed or upset because he's being interrupted all the time.
Yes.
So that's vital. Yeah. As you say, sit around a dinner table, switch off those phones, do everything, and ask any questions of your parents. As you said, tell what happened at school today. I was bullied or I did this or whatever it is. It's so vital. It's
yes,
very important.
Yes, and you know, being able to communicate is also one of the critical skills. Being able to communicate your ideas clearly is also central to the education of the future. And the best way to practice it is actually in the family. Of course, what's wonderful is if it's not just your parents, but you've got grandparents and uncles and aunts and cousins that you can share this. Education, we can't just hand over to the school and say, educate my kid. Education is primarily at home, the context of home. And yes, there are social problems, and their parents that wake up early and they come back late. And but if we just keep plugging away at this idea that the quality of your life is dependent on the quality of decisions, and therefore improve decision making, and how do we do it? Is through improving our brain function, especially the frontal lobe, which is involved in many types of decision making. I think that's the way to go. It's not going to be more technology and more tablets and iPads. Those are just enablers. It's how to use your noodle. There's a there's a famous book by Napoleon Hill called Think and Become Rich, something like that. And he couldn't find the name for it. And he wanted to use your noodle to make the boodle. And, you know, we talk about it in Jewish, and I'm sure it's in many other cultures, is just finance and economics. Where's the next big thing? Where's the opportunity? And you know, you get both sides of the story. And one parent's conservative, the other one's more of an entrepreneur. So many things can be discussed. But you need the discipline to say for half an hour every day when we have a meal together, there is no interruptions. And you can have rules like the two-minute rule. And I used to have a yellow card and a red card, because based on soccer, and my kids loved to watch soccer when they were younger. And when I said, I'm about to bring out a yellow card, they kept quiet. Because two yellow cards mean, you know, a red card.
Right, we're taking a break. We're back in a moment.
Reflections of the Past with Isaac Resnick, exclusively on 101.9 High FM.
Just to remind you that Sunday we have the Art of the Canter between 4 and 5. Tuesday morning, Talk of the Town between 9 and 10. Shabbat comes in this evening, 5:05. Motzei Shabbat, 5:58. The Parsha Shalach. Tomorrow, Shabbat Mevorechim. The benching of Rosh Chodesh, Tammuz, which will be next Friday and Shabbat. So we were talking to Dr. Jonathan Mach and to Thabo Malengi all about education and tradition. Thabo, your final word on this subject.
You know what, I think if there's anybody in the education department who cares, should actually start thinking hard about the next syllabus because of the current one is just not a winning formula. Maybe it is a winning formula, but the way it's rolled out by the demotivated educators, they need to do something about teachers. I mean, I was reading, there was a stats that in KZN, more than 50% of the teachers are not qualified teachers.
Correct.
More than 50%. Now, this is just a stat in KZN. What about the other provinces? Back in high school, I was taught by somebody who was the highest standard that he passed was standard 8. And he comes to teach, you know, your grade 10s and stuff like that. And then they rely on experience. What if the person has been doing a wrong thing for the past 20 years? And then you say, just because of he's got 20 years experience, he's got the right to teach matriculants. But anyway, so yeah, about family, I think it's very important. Myself, I'm just new in this parenting game, so it's a lesson.
So we'll start early. I think when you're talking about the education department, the real education department is in the family. I think we have to be very careful waiting or thinking that, you know, the Jewish culture goes back. We've never really had a school system. We've had yeshivas, but it's only the last couple of hundred years because most of the teaching was actually in the home. You know, if you look at the prophet Isaiah, my favorite prophet, like Isaiah, chapter 42, verse 6, be a light unto the nations. Be a light unto the nations. And I think that's the essence of education, is that if we're given this great gift of a brain and mind, we can enlighten other people and help other people. Education begins at home, at how many books. Just a final thought on tradition is when I was interviewing medical students' applications 30 years ago, one of the important criteria is how many books do you have in your home? I was absolutely amazed how many people had less than 20 or 25 books. We are moving. We have over 6,000 books in our house. Read twice, no, I'm only joking. But 6,000 books. We have about 150 boxes already. But this is I think, well done, Isaac. You've shifted us into the greatest tradition, not Kneidlach on Pesach and cheesecake on Shavuot, but education. That is our greatest tradition. So thank you and Shabbat Shalom and have a great weekend.
Jonathan, I'd like to invite you to come and see my library. If you say you got boxes, I would have to take a whole pentechnion to move my library.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
I would love to. I would love to.
Over, I would say 7,500 books.
Yeah, maybe we 6,000, maybe about 8,000 if I come to you.
and a lot of it, of course, I've got all now converted onto.
But this is a good mark, is how many books there are in a home. Very interesting.
Yeah.
If you read, and Warren Buffett, who's one of the most successful investors in the world, 80% of his day is reading. Reading. reading.
And you go to school, the last final, if you go to schools today, there's no more books, no more textbooks. It's all on the iPad, and that's where it's lost. There's nothing that can replace a book.
Nothing. In fact, if you listen to Benjamin Trisk from Exclusive Books, says there is a shift away from Kindle now, especially into African fiction. There's a massive exponential rise for those kind of books, African fiction.
Right. Anyway. Now, so go well. Have a wonderful Shabbat. Nice meeting you. Thank you for listening. And this program's repeated on Sunday between 9 and 10. Thank you, Tabo, for controlling. It's been a pleasure. I'm glad you joined in. And have a wonderful public holiday and have a wonderful weekend.